Hello once again to Teaching English is Fun. This is the podcast for teachers and students and anyone else who wants to listen to my voice here. It's been a long time, actually. COVID-19, the coronavirus, has kind of sidelined me. I used to, during my lunchtime at work, I would work on my podcast and then try to write at home while I was doing other things. And unfortunately, because of this, school is out. So I have a young daughter, and my wife teaches her math while I'm working on my day job. And then, after I'm done with my day job at night, I have to begin teaching my daughter English, which is kind of what I'm doing right here. So anyway, this kind of took a little bit step to the side, but I'm trying to get right back into it. I've got to rework the way I do my schedule now, and hopefully to let everybody out there get some more English learning and some English ideas for classes. If you want to follow along with today's podcast, you can go to teachingenglishisfun.com. And if you just search for crazy language or just the word crazy, this should pop right up on the site there. I will actually put a link directly to this page in the show notes as well. So as you all probably know, I'm Jim once again, and let me go ahead and just get right into this, because it's been a while since I've done this, and you can tell I'm probably rusty because I've been socially isolating on this podcast as well. So this English is a crazy language, actually, is a famous piece. It's been floating around the internet forever, and it's been around there for years. The problem is that if you're not a native speaker of English, then it probably makes next to no sense as you read through this. What I did for my class is I broke it down, for any of you non-native English speakers, I broke it down. And even native English speakers sometimes may get confused by some of these things or wonder why we say it this way or that way. There's a lot of phrasal verbs in this piece, and there's a lot of hard to understand maybe idioms or other things that you may not know. So I'm going to try to go through and just explain what some of these things are. So now, if you're a teacher, then you can help make this intelligible to your class and teach them quite a lot of English in the process if you want to go through this. If you're a student, though, listen along, and hopefully you will learn something here. So I've written this out in a way so that I have the original text, and then right after it, I'm going to follow it up with my explanation for what something means or why it is so crazy. So let's go ahead without further ado and begin. English is a crazy language, and I'm going to read the text right here first. Let's face it. English is a crazy language. There's no egg and eggplant, nor ham and hamburger, neither apple nor pine and pineapple. English muffins weren't invented in England, or French fries in France. Sweetmeats are candies, while sweet breads, which aren't sweet, are meat. All right, now let me break down that one paragraph right there. Sweetmeats and sweet bread. Sweetmeats are sweet, sugary food like candies, or also some kind of pastries. Also, we consider sweetmeats. Sweet bread, though, that is a culinary means like a cooking term that comes from the organs. So basically, organ meat, right, is what we call sweetmeat. So sometimes a stomach or a liver, those type of things right there would be considered sweetmeat. Okay, going on to the next paragraph here. We take English for granted, but if we explore its paradoxes, we find that quicksand can work quite slowly. Boxing rings are square, and a guinea pig is neither from Guinea, nor is it a pig. All right, and then going through that right here, quicksand is the thing that I picked out of here right here, but often used in movies and TVs. It's kind of a slow death. You see the person sinking in the sand and all. It is actually a sand that basically swallows people up, right? But in reality, I did some research on this, and people would not be completely covered with quicksand. It can, though, trap you normally up into your chest, maybe, and then you would stop sinking. So you can be stuck there, and if nobody's around to help you, you could be stuck there for a long time and probably die that way. So it is deadly nonetheless, but it's just basically some sand that is very loose and granular and cannot hold the weight of someone. I saw a cool picture when I was looking for stuff here where I saw a Jeep that was stuck in quicksand, and just the very, very tip of it was showing because the sand just swallowed it all up. So, the other things are pretty self-explanatory in this thing. Boxing ring, of course, is not round like a ring normally is, right? It's square. And then a guinea pig is, they look like a, they're almost like a cross between a hamster and a rabbit, right? They're about the size of a rabbit, small rabbit. And, they make like this squealing noise, like wee, 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 wee. Yeah, maybe that's why they call them pigs, but they're actually more related, closer to a hamster is what they look like, but hamster and a rabbit kind of combined. All right, well, moving on to the next paragraph. Why is it that writers write, but fingers don't fing, grocers don't gross, and hammers don't ham? If the plural of teeth... tooth is teeth, why isn't the plural of booth beef? One goose, two goose, so one moose, two meese? One blouse, two blice? Eh, doesn't it seem crazy that you can make amends, but not one amend? You can comb through the annals of history, but not a single annal. And if you have a bunch of odds and ends and then get rid of all but one, what do you call it? So now going through the these things right here, that first paragraph, there's not really much to explain in that other than it's just making fun of the, like, you know, fingers, they don't fing, right? You know, grocers don't gross, right? They sell groceries, you know, we say hammers don't ham, hammers, you know, hit nails, right? Tooth would be teeth, right? When you have more than one tooth, it's teeth. But like booth, we don't say beef. You know, goose, we don't say geese, right? So same thing with moose, you know. So anyway, it's just talking about some of the strange ways that we make plurals out of some words. And a lot of this sometimes is where the word came from. You know, depending whether it's a Latin word or... sometimes we have some words that are actually French that we use, you know, so depending on where the origin of that word is, it may actually cause it to be a little different. And then make amends, right? Make amends. I'm going to read through these things right here, is to try to do something to correct a mistake or a bad situation that you have caused, right? But it's just saying that we make amends, but we never make amend, right? Not just one amend, right? We make amends. And then we comb through the annals of history, right? Comb through means to search, right? And the annals of history is like historical records of history. Annals could all, annal could be like a chronological or a time ordered thing. It could be, when I was looking up some things for some research for this, I saw something, they said your high school yearbook could be an annal of history showing bad haircuts, right? So anyway, so some fun things right there. All right. And then, a bunch of odds and ends. Odds and ends just means like pieces of bits and stuff, right? So you have odds and ends, but we don't say just you know, one odd, right? You know, if you only have one left, right? I've got an end, I've got an odd, right? So anyway, it's bits and pieces of things, right? You know, or odds and ends. All right, and then this next part, moving along right here, this is one of my favorite parts of this. If teachers taught, why didn't preachers prod? If a vegetarian eats vegetables, what does a humanitarian eat? If you wrote a letter, perhaps you boat your tongue? instead of bite your tongue. I bit my tongue, right? Would be the past tense of bite. You would say, I bit my tongue, not bote my tongue, right? We write a letter, you know, bite your tongue, right? But past tense of write is wrote. Why isn't the past tense of bite boat, right, is what they're saying. All right, and then this paragraph right here is talking about kind of a famous, joke that a lot of people use. You know, if a vegetarian eats vegetables, what does a humanitarian eat, right? You know, so it just means vegetables eat vegetables, so a humanitarian must eat humans, right? Of course, though, the real meaning of humanitarian is someone who is generous, tries to help stop human suffering. I've got a picture on my page right there. You can see it's a very famous humanitarian. We think of Mother Teresa, right? When a lot of people think of a humanitarian, they think of Mother Teresa because she did a lot for humanity. Well, let's go ahead and take ourselves a short little break, because this is actually quite long, and we've got to go through this right here and continue on. But first, a word from our sponsors. All right, welcome back. This is definitely a long one today, but anyway, I feel I haven't done many in a while, so I'll give you guys a nice long one, hopefully chock full of good English to learn. All right, so moving along right here, right after the picture of Mother Teresa, if you're following along on your page, this is the next paragraph. Sometimes I think all the English speakers should be committed to an asylum for the verbally insane. In what language do people recite at a play and play at a recital? Ship by truck and send cargo by ship. Have noses that run and feet that smell. Park on driveways and drive on parkways. All right, and then going through this right here. Asylum, by the way, in Korean is Michigwangi Chib, I think. You know, like a place where maybe insane people, crazy people, you know, they put crazy people. So they're saying that, you know, it should be for the verbally insane. Verbally meaning speaking, you know, or using English. So now I'll go through and break down some of these things right here. We recite at a play, right? To recite something at a play means to say lines during a play. So, you know, friends, Romans, countrymen, I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil men do lives long after them. The good is often interred with their bones. So let it be with Brutus. So let it be with Caesar, not Brutus. The noble Brutus hath told you Caesar was ambitious. Anyway. So, saying lines during a play like that. To be or not to be. Anyway. Now, play at a recital. What that means is to play a musical instrument at some kind of musical performance. So, a recital is a performance of some kind with instruments, or it could be singing also, I suppose. But all right, and moving along here, driveway. If you have a house, you have a driveway. Normally, your driveway is in front of your garage, right? So you may actually park your car in the garage. Though a lot of people in America fill up their garage with junk, and they have to park their car outside. My house actually does not have a garage. I have a driveway, but no garage, so I have no choice but to park my car outside. And then parkway, we drive on parkway. So a parkway can be like a highway, right? So it's something a little different. And then some of those other things right there, I didn't write these down, but like we ship something by truck, you know, or you can send cargo, right? Cargo is another word for stuff that you want to send, right? But because it's got the word car and go, right? But you send it by ship, you know? So anyway, some funny things. And your nose runs, right? If you have a cold, hopefully everybody out there is healthy with this COVID-19. But if you have a cold, maybe your nose, you've got, in Korean, they say komul, we say mucus, or the slang term is snot, you know, for stuff coming out your nose. Sometimes it's green and horrible looking. Sometimes it's clear. Anyway, so your nose is running, right? You know, we say that, a runny nose. And then your feet smell, right? You know, anyway, there's another joke with that. You know, like, how do you stop a fish from smelling, you cut off its nose. Anyway, all right, so moving along to the next part right here. How can a slim chance and a fat chance be the same, while a wise man and a wise guy are opposites? How can overlook and oversee be opposites, while quite a lot and quite a few are alike? How can the weather be hot as hell one day and cold as hell the next? Or another. All right, so looking through this right here, slim chance and fat chance actually mean the same exact thing. There's very little chance of something happening, right? So, you know, some guy is asking some beautiful girl out for a date. Hey, baby, what's the chances of you going out with me? Fat chance, right? You know, or we can also say he had a slim chance of getting a date with that girl, right? We can use the same thing. And a wise man, of course, is someone who is very knowledgeable. And a lot of times we even think of the wise man sitting on a mountain, and you go up and ask him questions for the answers to the meaning of life, right? While a wise guy is someone who is always telling jokes, doesn't take things too seriously. So they're always joking around. That's a wise guy. Now, if you overlook something, right, that means you miss something. He overlooked the important fact that the land belonged to someone else, right? So to overlook means to not notice it, or to forget something, or not see something, right? Oversee, if you are like a manager and you're in charge of a group of people, then you oversee them. So you have to watch them. You have to keep a close eye on them, right? So that's why it says that they're opposites right there. Okay, now let's go ahead and get to this next part right here. Have you ever noticed that we talk about certain things when they are absent, only when they are absent? Have you ever seen a horse full carriage, or a strap full gown, met a sung hero, or experienced requited love? Have you ever run into someone who was combobulated, gruntled, ruly, or peckable? And where are all those people who are spring chickens, or who would actually hurt a fly? All right, now going through this right here, this is what this is talking about, that in English, a lot of times, if something is not there, then we make a word for it. So for example, when cars first came out, they referred to them as horseless carriages, right? So that's why we say horse full carriage, a horseless carriage, right? And a gown, normally you've got like some kind of spaghetti strap or something, you know, going over your shoulders for a gown, which is another word for dress. But if you have a strapless gown, it means that it doesn't have any kind of straps up there, right? But we normally, if a gown does have a strap up there, we don't say it's a strap full gown, right? We just say it's a gown, right? Then the sung hero, right? Yeah, actually we say unsung hero. Unsung hero refers to someone who has done great deeds, but receives little or no recognition for them. Like, for example, these days with all this COVID-19 going around, and all our doctors and our nurses are out there going to the hospital and taking care of us and watching over us, you know, so they may not be famous, but some people could say maybe they are unsung heroes, because maybe they're taking care of us, or hopefully saving us, right, in this time of need. And then requited love. Actually, we don't ever use that term, requited love. We say unrequited love, right? Unrequited love means that you love someone, but it is not returned. In Korea, I think they say one-sided love is like the Konglish that they say. Nobody ever says one-sided love. You know, we just say that it was unrequited love, right? He loved her, but she didn't love him. Or she loved him, but he didn't love her, right? You know, it can be that same thing. So their love was unrequited, right? All right, and then these other words right here, if you look down at below the picture of the fly right there, combobulated, gruntled, ruly, or peckable, we don't use those terms normally. We say discombobulated. Someone's discombobulated, they're confused and disconcerted, or maybe frustrated, right? So for example, if I was supposed to give a speech somewhere, supposed to say something, and somebody heckled me or said something, and I forgot my lines. I forgot what I was supposed to say. Maybe I was discombobulated by that guy who interrupted me, and I didn't know what I'm doing or how to speak or blah, 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 like that, for example. All right, and disgruntled. If you are angry or dissatisfied, a lot of times we use that with a disgruntled employee or disgruntled customer. So, for example, somebody worked at a place and they got fired and they felt they didn't deserve to be fired. We could say that person is a disgruntled customer. So, or disgruntled employee, right? He's angry, you know, or dissatisfied. And to be dissatisfied, maybe you get something at a restaurant, and restaurant managers are always told to you know, that you, for every one angry person out there, every disgruntled customer, you just lost 20 other people. Because what happens? When you're upset, you go out and you tell everybody, don't go to that restaurant. Oh, those people, you know what they did, right? But if you're you know, if something's really good, you may tell a few people, but it's normally not as much as if we're upset and angry about something. So disgruntled, that's someone disgruntled. Unruly, a lot of times you hear this term when we're talking about children, right? Unruly children. Maybe a lot of parents these days are having to homeschool their kids because in America, all the schools are basically closed. And some of the school years are just stopped. And I know ours is. So my wife and I have suddenly become teachers, right? I have been a teacher before. I did not like teaching children, but I like teaching adults. Well, now I'm back teaching one child, you know, my daughter again. But it's okay. You know, I have a feeling she's probably getting a better education from me than she was when she was at school. So she gets my undivided attention. But unfortunately, I get her divided attention, right? And that's one thing we say, get someone's undivided attention. It's another example of this type of thing where we use the term undivided. It means that they're focused on you. They're not looking at anything else. You get someone's undivided attention. But normally we don't say, I got their divided attention, right? We normally don't use that expression. All right. And impeccable, right? So impeccable is faultless, keeping with the highest standards. Usually we talk about someone's character, like he's of a high moral character or appearance, right? His appearance was impeccable, meaning his clothes were perfect, his shoes were shined, there wasn't a loose thread anywhere, right? Or someone has impeccable character, meaning they were very, you know, pure person, right? And they would never do anything dishonest. And then spring chicken. What this is, and where are all those people who are spring chickens, right? Well, what we say is, you know, spring chicken, because normally in spring is when people buy the chickens, right, for the farm, or get new chicks for the farm if they're going to raise them. I know my wife and I were looking around, and my wife was telling me we should get chickens because then we wouldn't have to go to the store to buy eggs. We just have chickens at home, right? So, I don't think our neighbors would like that. So, but a lot of times a person is older, right? They may say, I'm no spring chicken, right? Meaning that I'm not that young anymore. I used to be able to do that, but nowadays I can't do it because I am no spring chicken, right? Like that. And then we normally use this phrase also, he wouldn't hurt a fly, meaning somebody is very peaceful and nice and not mean at all, right? You know, so we say that guy wouldn't hurt a fly, right? Meaning that they're just very gentle natured. All right. And then moving along right here, let's go to the next paragraph, a little short paragraph, but it does have lots of phrasal verbs coming up. So you have to marvel at the unique lunacy of a language in which your house can burn up as it burns down, in which you fill in a form by filling it out, and in which an alarm clock goes off by going on, right? So, for example, right here. So if something burns up, right, it's destroyed by heat, normally by fire, right? So if it burns down, it's the same thing. It's destroyed by heat, by fire. So so same meaning for those two words, right? Fill in a form. Normally, you're writing in information such as your name, your address. Depending if you're trying for a job, you may fill in a form with your characteristics, what you did at your last job, what your skills are, right? So you can also fill out that same form, right? So we can fill something in and fill it out, right, as well. And then your alarm goes off by sounding. So, you know, your alarm's going off. He set his alarm to go off at 6 in the morning, right? So it actually goes on. It actually turns on by going, you know, it goes off, right? But it's actually going on, right? So anyway, that's, again, opposite meanings right there. Actually, we normally don't say the alarm went on or whatever. We normally always say the alarm went off. But in reality, it's going on, right? So anyway, interesting. All right, and moving along, almost done right here, the next paragraph. English was invented by people, not computers, and it reflects the creativity of the human race, which, of course, isn't a race at all. That is why, when the stars are out, they are visible, but when the lights are out, they are invisible. And why, when I wind up my watch, I start it, but when I wind up this essay, I end it. Anyway, so now... So stars are out. That means you can see them twinkling in the sky right there. And I've even got a picture on my page right there. The light is out, you know, meaning it's not turned on, right? So that one actually makes sense, right? But when the stars are out, we can actually see them, right? So, and then you wind up your watch. So normally wind up is something where if you've got like a little key, sometimes you have wind up toys. Where they've got like a little key in the back, you know, or sometimes watches. Nowadays, I think not as many people have a wind up watch, but you know, you have like a little thing on the side and you turn it, and it actually coils a spring within the watch, which keeps it working, right? But when you wind up an essay, for example, you can also finish it, right? Anyway, and that is it. So, crazy English explained, I hope. As you can see, the original text is quite confusing. Imagine trying to explain this to a bunch of non-native English learners. Come to think of it, hopefully that's what I have just done right here. I've also done that in my class before. I know you may have a lot more questions, so please feel free to send me emails, leave me comments on my webpage, whatever you want to do, and I will try to get back to you guys and let you know kind of what something means or some different phrases, and I welcome some extra ideas, extra work. One of the reasons that I haven't done a lot of stuff is because my whole schedule changed, but I'm also kind of looking for things. I had a little bit of a writer's block for a while, so hopefully we will keep going. Till then, keep having fun as you learn or teach English, and remember that to all stay safe out in this, COVID-19 coronavirus thing. I hope that this podcast finds everybody healthy and well, and keep having fun, because as I always say, teaching English is fun, and I will talk to you guys again soon.